This is an interview with Mr. Stan Waite at his home in Cherry Willingham, talking about his life regarding his work at RAF Scampton in the 1930s. Okay, Stan.
Well, Scampton was opened in 1916 as a First World War airfield, which they used towards the end of the war, 1916. And they used it as a training ground for pilots. And then it went back into farmland. And I left school at 14, went straight on the farm. And then in 1935, the MOD decided they were going to rearm and that they wanted to bring back Scampton as an airfield. Because in the First World War, they called it Brattleby. They didn't want to get confused with a place called Scanton, near Scunthorpe, so they called it Brattleby. When they reclaimed it in 1935-36 to build the airfield, they decided it would be Scampton Airfield, although a part of it did carry on over into Aisthorpe. Well, when they started building, taking all the crops and the edges out, and grassing it down. We had all that job. The farmer that was already on the farm, he couldn't find the capital to pay all the contractors and subcontractors for clearing the crops and that, so the local farmer decided he would take it over, and it happened to be the farm where I was working. So we had two gangs of potato pickers taking potatoes up, no bigger than marbles. We're taking sugar beet up, no thicker than your thumb. They opened the factory to purpose to process it to sugar. We got a gyro tiller in, which is a machine which people were astounded to see how it used to work. It grubbed all the edges out, and some of them was thorn trees, and it made no bother with that. It just went along the edge row and knocked them down, and then dropped his rotors at the back and grubbled them all out. There's rats and rabbits flying in all directions. And then we had to burn all that, and then we got the two gangs of potato pickers, two gangs of Irish labourers taking the sugar beet and the potatoes up. And that, of course, threw extra work on us. We were working nearly all hours the Lord sent us. And we got all that done, and then we had to work the land down and level it, and then sow it down with grass seed and roll it. And then I went back on the farm, and it was taken over by the MOD. And when the builders started moving in, they wanted a lot of labourers up there, and the wage I was getting on the farm was a pittance compared with what you were getting on working for the MOD. And I was getting as much in a day as I was in a week on the farm.
Can you remember how much that was?
Yes, I was getting 50 pence a week, which was 10 shillings in today's money. And I was getting as much as that in a day. So my brother, he had a job up there, and he got me a job up there as well. So I left the farm and went up there and worked up there, digging the sewers, digging the footings out for buildings, the drains for the surface water. And I was still working up there when the first aircraft came in 1936. And it was a mixture of hawkers. I don't know whether there were any Harts among them, but there was Audax and Hind and that type of aircraft. And
I think Hayfords were there as well.
Well, a lot of the history books say they came first, but they didn't. The Hawkers came first from up north. And anyway, I was up there till the aircraft came, and then our job's finished. There were one or two tidying up jobs to be done, and I went back onto the farm.
Because there was no runways laid?
No runways laid at all. It was just grass. A lot of people get the idea that later on that the dam busters took off on runways, but they didn't. They didn't take it till they put it in grace and favour, and it was closed for about 2 years when they laid the runways and the parry tracks and dispersal points. And I was working on the farm when the heavies came down from up north, and they came down as Affords and Virginias, and history books still have it that they came first, and it took them 3 days to come, but it didn't. They all came one afternoon. And I distinctly remember that because I had a gang of potato-picking girls from Lincoln picking potatoes, and I was spinning out for them. And one of the girls said to me, look up there, look at what's all that coming down, and the sky was black with these heavy bombers coming. And then later on, of course, they didn't stop long. We had a disaster when one evening the gales got up, and of course the planes weren't anchored down. And three of the Affords finished up in the middle of the airfield, locked together. And another one finished up in the bank side of the A15 that runs past Scampton Airfield. So they didn't last very long, and they went and the Virginias went. And then after that, we had a fairly rapid turnover of various aircraft. We had the Vickers Long Range Wellesley, which... It was a bit of a disaster for Scampton because there were four squadrons at different airfields had got four ready for the long distance attack on the long distance for a single engined aircraft. And of course we had an A stack at the side of the old polyplat lane, and the one that Scampton had got ready, he came in and he caught it with his wing, and that ripped that one off. So it's just left the three that they got one for spare, you see. So they just had the three then, and Scampton took no part in that. I think they flew from in Egypt down to Australia, I think it was, if my memory serves me right. And then we had the heavy bomber, the new Arrow bomber came, which was an I-wing monoplane, fixed undercarriage. That didn't stay at Scampton long before it was taken away. And then... After that, it was a various mixture, and of course I got called up and went into the army and served with the Royal Engineers, serving under three generals, served under Montgomery, of course, of the 8th Army, and McCree, and I can't remember the name of the other one. Anyway, I served under three generals. We was pulled back from Alamein, was the first troops in Sicily with the first wave of commandos. I was there with the Royal Engineers, mine clearing and bridging and that. And then there was first troops in the toe of Italy. And then we cut the eel off and went straight across to the Adriatic side. And we bridged almost every river up the Adriatic side right through. And then when the war came, we were in the mountains at L'Aquila, which some 2 or 3 years back had that disastrous earthquake. We relieved that, then was pulled back to the coast and went through into Austria, and that's where I finished up.
So you weren't just here when the Lancasters came and the dam busters?
No, I hadn't got back home then.
No.
They brought us back home in 1945. But we had to go back to Austria for a year to wait being reverted to Civvy Street,
right.
from the army.
Right.
So that so we went back then. So 1946 September. By the time I got back home again, but while we was in Italy, while we was in Egypt, while we was in Italy. It was 3.5 years, and our families never knew where we were. Everything was checked before when you wrote and everything like that. And it was you couldn't put anything in to give them a clue where you were.
No.
You was either MEF, Middle Eastern Forces, or Med Forces. That's the only clue they knew. They knew you were somewhere in the Middle East or you were somewhere in Europe.
Did you go back to working at Scampton?
Yes, I went back, but you see, in them days, if you was called up, the person you worked for was legally bound to take you back to work. But I didn't want to go back to the same bloke as I'd been with, because he didn't have a cottage, and I'd got married in 1941. So I went to see a friend of mine who was farming the other farm in Scampton, a Mr. Anderson, asked him if I could have a cottage. He said, you can have a cottage, he said, and you can have a job as well. So I went on to that farm, started on the first working Monday in 1947. And of course we had that terrific snow right through, one of the worst winters the country have seen in Lincolnshire anyway. And I stayed on that farm for 42 years. I worked with that man for 21 years and then he sold out and retired. And the gentleman that took over put me in full charge. He was a gentleman from workshop. And I was with him 21 years, so that was 42 years on one farm. And I stayed with him then till I retired in when I was 84 years old.
And did you see the Vulcans coming? Oh,
yes, I was stood at the side of the runway when the first Vulcan came. Because our land at that time, the man I went to work for, you see, he was farming Scampton Cliff as well. So we saw the Vulcan circling and coming round to line up with the runway, so we walked across because we were still farming all in and out the dispersal points.
None of that land was needed for the new runways and the diversion of the A-15?
Well, no. They put the diversion in before the Vulcans came,
yes.
The A-15, and the runways had already been put down and everything,
right.
All the dispersals. But we were still working the land in between the dispersals and the runways and all that, because there was very little security in them days. I mean, and a lad who was working with me, we walked across and the jeep came round from the hangar and communications weren't like they are now. He just had a big board in the back of his van and it said, follow me. And he, when the Vulcan stopped, he pulled in front on it and the Vulcan followed him into the hangar. And of course, once they got it into the hangar, you didn't see any more Vulcans for about 4 or 5 weeks because there's so much interior work to be done on them and instrument fittings and all that type of thing. And then, of course, I watched the build-up day after day, and then they finally moved us off the camp altogether. But I got to know quite a few of the crew members, and that were working at the side of the airfield then, but not on it. And I've always been interested in aeroplanes right the way through to the present day.
When you knew that the Spectacular Dams raid had taken place and they'd flown from Scampton, did you?
We didn't know anything about it where we were.
When you heard about this,
yeah.
Afterwards?
We thought, well, it'll soon be over now.
Did you feel a sort of, well, I was involved with that.
Well, that's right, yeah. I don't know how to build that place. And my brother was the last, probably the last half a dozen people to work up there when they, he was a foreman concreter, concreting the walls on the hangars and that sort of work. So he was used to the heights like that. And I was up there when the Orcas came. They had a disaster one day. We was working on a surface drain between hangars 1 and 2. And they'd already started flying, of course. But on the 1398 that you run through Scampton now, it used to run straight across the cliff top. And about 50 yards inside the airfield boundary, they'd put a 12x12 target up at an angle. And these Orcas used to come along, usually from the north, along the line of the road, bank and turn and camera gun it. And this one was doing it one day when there was two ticking off in Ashland to starboard, and he went straight through them and it killed 3 pilots, a pilot and a passenger in one, probably another co-pilot, and the single seater came and went straight through and killed 3 of them, and that was it. And for many years after that, the edge, the opposite side of the road to the airfield, had a lady used to come out and put a one of them little crosses in the edge bottom. But of course the edges have all gone now, so there's none of that. So that was my contribution to the war effort before I went in the army and a little bit after the army.
That's been absolutely fascinating, Stan. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope it hasn't wasted your time, though. I mean, there's a lot more I could tell you about my life, but that's gone.